Chapter 8. The Fence. I did not fall off my horse while riding that morning, although I did come close a few times. Summer had often told me that she loved horseback riding because she could free her mind while she was doing it. When riding, she could think about all sorts of things. I understood what she meant. I felt that way when hiking or riding my bicycle. But when I was on a horse, all I could think about was trying to stay on the horse. That and how much my rear end was hurting. Because of this, my plans to question Jasmine and Auron during our ride didn't work out so well. I had to wait until we got to our destination. Luckily, that wasn't too far away. The ride was only about 15 minutes. The Krautheimer's house was located in the northwestern section of the ranch, so most of the property extended south and east, but we headed the opposite way, to the northwestern corner, which abutted the town of West Yellowstone. Jasmine and Auron were riding their usual horses, Dynamite and Bandit. Because Summer knew how to ride, she had been given a feisty young filly named Powder Keg. Meanwhile, I had been given the least spirited horse at the ranch, Molasses. He had been named that because he moved very slowly, which was just fine with me. While Summer spurred Powder Keg to run circles in the fields, I was happy to plod along at a leisurely pace on Molasses. Despite my lack of skill on the horse, it was a beautiful ride. The sun had just come up, and the fields were bathed in the first rays of light. Pronghorn and white-tailed deer grazed, while jackrabbits bounded ahead of us. I even caught a glimpse of a long-tailed weasel darting through the grass. Our route took us parallel to the dirt road that ran between the Oyvay Corral and the Spooner Ranch. We were about halfway along when the Creek's pickup came rumbling down the road, kicking up the usual plume of dust. Arturo was at the wheel, with Daisy in the passenger seat. They honked to get our attention, then pulled over and yelled out the window.
"What are you doing out so early?" Daisy called.
"The kids are helping me figure out what happened to the bison," Jasmine called back. "What are you doing coming in so early?"
Arturo replied, "Heidi said Sasquatch got into the house, and now the whole place is a wreck."
Jasmine frowned, as though she was upset it hadn't occurred to her to call her parents.
"Yes, but no one was hurt, thankfully."
Just then, the car we had borrowed to visit Yellowstone the day before came barreling down the road, heading toward town from the house. Whoever was at the wheel was a terrible driver. The car was veering back and forth wildly. It flew past the pickup without slowing down, cloaking it in a cloud of dust that made both the Creeks cough, then kept on going. I caught a glimpse of Karina in the passenger seat, looking somewhat terrified, but couldn't make out who was driving.
"Who was that maniac?" Jasmine asked.
"I think it was my father," Summer said, looking embarrassed. "Sorry, he's the world's worst driver."
It occurred to me that in all the time I had known the McCrackens, I had never seen JJ behind the wheel of any vehicle. He always used a chauffeur. I had always assumed this was because having a chauffeur was a luxury, but now it occurred to me that maybe it was to keep JJ from driving. "They were sure in a hurry," I observed, then asked Summer,
"Did he tell you he was going anywhere today?"
"No," Summer replied. "He said he had something to take care of, but I thought that meant he was staying around the house."
"We'd best be heading on," Arturo said. "Sounds like we have a lot of cleaning to do."
"Don't be late for breakfast,"
Daisy warned, and then they continued on toward the house. We resumed our ride, veering away from the dirt road until we came to the northern edge of the property. There we found a great open field of grass, bounded by one of the main routes to Yellowstone. A few dozen of the Krautheimer's bison were grazing about 50 yards from the barbed wire fence that marked the property line. We were much closer to them than we had been the previous night.
I could see that each had a tag in its right ear with a number on it, as Jasmine had told us the night before. The tags were a variety of colors. There was a good number of young calves in the herd, most of which had probably been born that spring, as well as quite a few mid-sized bison, the equivalent of teenagers. The young were far more active than the adults and seemed to be playing. The calves were cavorting about, while the teens were chasing one another and occasionally butting heads. "This is why I like to come see them now," Jasmine said. "Once it gets hot out, all they want to do is graze and sleep." Even though it was shortly after sunrise, there was a good amount of traffic on the road to Yellowstone, visitors getting an early start on the day. We had done the same thing the day before, as Heidi had warned that on a busy summer morning, the traffic jams to get into the park could rival those in New York City at rush hour. A steady line of cars and RVs was heading east toward the park entrance, while only a single big old RV was heading out. Several carloads of tourists had pulled over on the side of the road, eager to see the Krautheimer's bison. I had no idea if any of them realized it was a captive herd, but no matter what, the animals were impressive. It was possible these were the first bison many of the tourists had ever seen. Some tourists were staying in their cars, taking photos through the rolled-down windows, either in too big a hurry to get to Yellowstone to stop for long, or too lazy to get out of their vehicles. But a few had parked and come to the barbed wire fence. Most were taking selfies with the bison in the background. Even though the bison were so far away, they would probably only look like tiny brown dots in the photos. A few visitors were simply watching the herd with rapt attention, awed by the magnificent beasts. Jasmine stopped her horse at a spot along the fence where no tourists were gathered, then hopped to the ground. The rest of us followed her lead and did the same. Auren and Summer got off their horses expertly. I did not. Instead, I got my foot stuck in the stirrup and fell on my butt in the grass. This provoked some giggles from the tourists in the distance. Jasmine said, "This is the only point on the whole property that comes close to a public road. If anyone was going to steal one of our bison, this is where it'd make the most sense to do it." "A male bison can weigh over a ton," Auren added by way of agreement, "and a female can weigh half that. So there's no easy way to move them unless you have a truck." Jasmine left Dynamite behind and started to walk along the fence. She didn't even bother to tether the horse up, apparently confident that he wouldn't run off. Sure enough, Dynamite stayed exactly where she had left him and started grazing. Most of the tourists now shifted their attention to Jasmine. "Look," I heard one father exclaim to his children, "a real live cowgirl." I followed Jasmine, keeping an eye on the bison that were grazing nearby. Neither Jasmine nor Auren seemed concerned about them, but I figured I should stay on the alert while close to such large animals. Bison don't have the sharp teeth or claws of grizzlies, but they can still do a lot of damage with their horns and hooves. Plus, their great bulk alone is dangerous. Animals that big can hurt you simply by bumping into you too hard. I dropped in beside Auren and asked, as naturally as I could, "Did you guys see any sign of Sasquatch when you went back to the bunkhouse last night?" "No," he replied, "and we didn't hear him either. We had no idea he was nearby until Heidi came and woke us." "Have you ever seen him around at night?" "Not directly, but we've seen evidence. Sasquatch leaves the biggest bear poops I've ever seen. They're the size of cantaloupes. And we've seen prints, too. I wouldn't ever wander around this property by myself at night. Although I never expected Sasquatch would want to come inside. We'll need some better locks on our doors." "So then, all of you went back to the bunkhouse together and then went right to bed?" "The others did. I called my girlfriend first. She also works on a ranch, north of Bozeman, about 2 hours away from here, so we only get to see each other every few days." "But you're sure everyone else went to sleep right away?" Auron gave me a curious look, which meant I had probably pushed my questioning too far.
As far as I know, I mean, I don't go around and tuck everyone in.
It occurred to me that I should probably take a look at the bunkhouse to see what the layout was. Maybe someone had snuck out and gone to the house to steal the necklace before Sasquatch had shown up. Although, I still had no idea how they would have gotten past the locked door and windows of the master bedroom.
"Here it is," Jasmine said suddenly.
She had stopped by one of the fence posts. The rest of us joined her to see what she thought was so important. Nothing looked out of the ordinary to me. The fence was a basic barbed wire fence. I had seen thousands of miles of it strung along the roads in central Texas. This one was newer than most. Since it was located along the main road, I presumed it needed to be replaced more than usual. Half the tourists were leaning on it so they could move their phones a few inches closer to the bison. Those few inches certainly didn't make one bit of difference to their photos, but they were doing it anyhow. The fence posts were shafts of 4x4s, cemented into holes in the ground. 6 strings of barbed wire were affixed to the posts with U-shaped nails. Every now and then, there was a small tuft of brown hair caught on one of the barbs, indicating that a bison had rubbed up against it. Apparently, Auron and Summer didn't see what was so important about the fence post either, because both just stared at Jasmine blankly.
"What should we be seeing here?" Auron asked.
"Look!"
Jasmine pointed to where there were 2 small holes in the post, above and below a strand of barbed wire.
"And here, and here."
She pointed to similar marks on lower strands.
"I don't get it," Summer said.
Jasmine explained,
"I think someone pulled these strands of barbed wire free, then nailed them back again."
I slowly grasped what she thought had happened. The sets of holes were all from the previous U-shaped nails that had held the strands in place. When I looked closer, I could spot small gouges in the wood between them, where someone had used a screwdriver to pry the nails loose.
"So what do you think happened?" I asked.
"They took the fence apart, stole a bison, and then patched it back up again?"
"Exactly."
Jasmine now pointed to the nails on the post.
"These are newer than the nails on posts a few yards away from here. That's only the case with 4 posts, but that's all the thieves would have needed. The posts are 10 feet apart, which means that if you remove the nails on 4, then you have 50 feet of slack wire. They could have pressed that down low enough to walk a bison over it, then pulled it back up and nailed it back into place."
"That's still not proof that someone stole the bison," Auron said. "Maybe whoever was building this fence ran out of one brand of nails and needed to use different ones."
"But it looks like some of the nails have been pried out," I said.
"Maybe they were hammered in wrong in the first place," Auron countered. Jasmine gave Auron an annoyed glance, as if she was frustrated with his arguments.
"I'm not saying you're wrong," Auron told her. "I'm only saying there are other reasons the fence could look like that."
Jasmine sighed heavily.
"I know, but this is all the evidence I have that the bison were stolen."
I considered the fence post again. It was impossible to say whether someone had actually taken the fence apart or not. But if someone had, they had done an extremely good job of covering their tracks. The fence looked almost normal, except for the tiny holes where the U-shaped nails had gone before and the gouges from removing them. It probably never would have been noticed unless someone had been looking for signs of tampering.
"Don't you have security cameras along the fence?" Summer asked.
Jasmine laughed.
"Maybe your father can afford to protect his ranch like that, but this place operates on a shoestring. There's 20 miles of fence. We're lucky we can afford to keep it standing upright, let alone run cameras along it."
Summer turned slightly pink. She never liked to take her family's wealth for granted and always found occasions where she did to be embarrassing. Then she stiffened slightly, looking annoyed. I followed her gaze and realized what had brought the change over her.
Two college-aged boys were coming along the fence, staring at Summer with the same amount of awe the other tourists had for the bison. They had obviously recognized her. The college boys came right up to the fence. Both had takeout cups of coffee in their hands.
"You're Summer McCracken, aren't you?"
one of the guys asked. Summer deployed her usual trick to deflect attention.
"Sadly, I'm not," she said, speaking with a fake deep western twang, "although I get mistaken for her a lot."
The college guys scrutinized her carefully, as though unsure whether to believe her or not.
"I'm really not her," Summer told them. "My name's Jolene Turpin, and I live right here on this ranch, not some fancy mansion in Texas."
"Could we take a selfie with you anyhow?" the second guy asked. "Then we could just tell people that you were her."
Summer frowned at the thought of this, then forced a smile onto her face.
"Oh, I don't think that'd be right," she said. "I don't want the real Summer McCracken getting angry at me for pretending to be her. I hope you understand."
She said it in a charming enough way that the guys had to agree with her, but they were obviously both disappointed.
"I guess so," one said.
They headed back to their car. On the way, one polished off his coffee, then crumpled the cup and simply dropped it on the shoulder of the road.
"Hey," Summer shouted after him. "You dropped something?"
"So?"
the guy asked.
"If the real Summer McCracken was here, she'd hate you for being a litter bug,"
Summer shouted after him. The guys didn't respond, even though they were obviously within earshot. I realized, to my dismay, that they weren't the first people to have behaved like this. The swath of grass between the fence and the road was strewn with trash from people who had stopped to watch the bison. Fast food containers, candy wrappers, shards of broken beer bottles. There was even some litter on our side of the fence. As I looked at my feet, I spotted quite a few bottle caps and cigarette butts. It struck me as bizarre that anyone could have stopped to see the bison, indicating that they had at least some appreciation of nature, and then dropped their garbage. But it had obviously happened over and over again. An idea suddenly occurred to me. If someone had recently pried the nails from the fence posts, maybe they had dropped them on the ground as well. I started kicking through the tall grass along the fence, trying to see if I could spot anything. Instead of a nail, I noticed something else. It was a thin piece of blue plastic, and it had landed sideways in a tuft of tall grass, so that it was almost impossible when seen from directly above. If I hadn't been carefully searching the ground, I might never have seen it. I reached down and picked it up.
"What's that?"
Summer asked me curiously.
"I think it's proof that the bison were stolen after all," I said.